This week, for the first time ever, the World Health Organization declared the spread of polio an international public health emergency that's undermining a nearly 30-year effort to eradicate the crippling disease. On this week's Please Explain, Dr. Rebecca Martin, director of the Global Immunization Division in the Center for Global Health at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, joins us to talk about the disease, the global effort to eradicate it, and why there's been an increase in polio infections this year in Pakistan and a reemergence in Syria, Somalia, and Iraq, countries that were previously polio-free. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And we also invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. Write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So, Dr. Martin, what kind of disease is polio? Is it viral? Is it bacterial?
Polio is a viral disease. It's a human enterovirus, as we say, and it is spread through the mouth and then is allowed to grow in the intestine and then gets into your bloodstream and affects your central nervous system, and this is where you see the paralysis can occur.
So it has to enter the mouth? Can infection come just from contact with somebody else?
It has to be through the mouth. It's usually through food or water are the primary sources that it's been seen, and in the connection with where we see areas with poor sanitation or hygiene, this is why we see so many cases in children under the age of 5 years because of sanitation habits at that age.
Can you describe what it does to the body?
Yes. So as I mentioned, when it enters into the bloodstream and can go into – it affects the nerve cells, and within that it destroys them. And by doing that, it can then lead to paralysis and cause your limbs to be sort of lifeless and not be able to move them, and they will weaken and deteriorate. If it goes into the brainstem, there's definitely a paralysis and death that can occur as well. So we see a lot of paralysis as well as death as potential outcomes of being infected with the polio virus.
Well, why are some people more affected than others? Some become almost completely paralyzed. Others may not have that kind of lasting damage, and as you said, it can be fatal.
So this is one thing. Everybody who is infected with it does not go on to develop paralysis or have what we call paralytic polio. For every one case of paralytic polio, there are necessarily about 200 cases or 200 people who've been infected with the virus. And so you can have mild symptoms, just sort of fatigue or weakness, or no symptoms at all. And this is what's the danger is, because it's sort of you're picking the one case at the tip of the iceberg, the one case that has paralysis. And you know underneath that are 200 people who are infected who are also shedding the virus. And it is shed through feces and can get into the environment and into the water and sanitation systems. So the risk factors for potentially going on to develop paralysis are not 100% sure. There's definitely been things with looking at different types of injections, whether you've had tonsillectomy and other sorts of conditions. But overall, the risk factors for why some develop into paralysis and others don't is not completely known.
I remember when iron lungs were associated with polio victims. Why were they necessary, and are they still being used?
So this was when the virus could go up into the central nervous system, and it goes up and towards the brain and affect into the areas of the thoracic area. It can cause basically quadriplegia, and it can also then paralyze the lungs. So what the iron lung did was actually do the breathing for a person. And so putting somebody in an iron lung to have the breathing to move the lungs was actually what was happening. This has not been used anymore in the United States or other countries that we've seen it. Most of the cases right now, what we've seen are in more of the developing or lower income countries, and we don't have the iron lungs there in those places.
So how do you treat polio these days or lessen its severity?
So there is no cure, first of all. I think that's very important to mention. And as far as treatment, there is none as well. The most important thing that one can do is to be vaccinated against the polio virus. In terms of if you go on to develop paralysis, there are sort of antispasmodic treatments, but also the importance of moving the joints and the limbs to lessen the effects or to weaken the effects that can happen with the paralysis to keep them motion.
Are children usually the most vulnerable?
Yes, they are the most vulnerable for the reasons that, as I said, the virus is shed in feces, and so by doing that, the sanitation habits of young children are usually the most vulnerable to be able to pick up things from the ground, to pick up different sources of water. And so this is where we see the most of the cases occurring under 5 years of age.
Now, we had one president who had it, but he wasn't crippled in childhood, was he, Franklin Roosevelt?
No. This is also what we have is you can be infected, and then later on, many people can go on to develop what's called post-polio syndrome, and about 40% do, where they may have had minor symptoms, but then later on in life can develop more muscle weakness that occurs in the fatigue that we see, and this is what has occurred in many cases, and we see about 40% of polio victims go on to do this.
And then a vaccine was developed by Jonas Salk.
Yes.
And was it used immediately all around the world?
No, it was not. There were definitely different trials going on. Just one example I know from personal experience of hearing the stories was with the Russian Federation that actually had done some of the initial trials and the large effort to get it, the use of it into West Africa. But initially, it was not used around the world. The U.S. was one of the first countries to push for moving for the use of it.
Is it ironic that a caller points out, Joan from Manhattan, that Medicare doesn't pay for polio boosters?
well, so mostly you get your childhood immunization series through your immunization programs. And then later in life, it's mainly we don't require boosters here in the United States unless you're traveling to areas where we know that wild poliovirus is circulating. In the United States, we know that the wild poliovirus is not circulating in our systems, in our water systems. And so the certainty of the region of the Americas, of which the United States is part of, has been certified polio free. So there's no requirement for boosters unless there's travel associated with that. And most of that then is paid by the consumer.
So if we're polio free and I've never had a polio shot, I'm still pretty safe if I stay in the United States?
No, it's still very important to be vaccinated. And this is something because there is, and you've talked a little bit about what happened on Monday, May 5th, is there is still the potential that every country is at risk for importation of wild poliovirus. And if it comes in and has the opportunity, given certain, and we do have sanitation situations in some places in the United States where if virus was introduced, it could potentially spread, but not to a large extent, and we would detect it quickly. But still, the important thing is to get all children vaccinated through their immunization programs.
Our number here is 212-433-9692 if you want to join the conversation, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate. How effective was the Salk vaccine? Why was the Sabin vaccine then also developed?
So the Salk vaccine is a killed vaccine that's injected, while the Sabin vaccine is an oral polio vaccine, which is a live vaccine but is given either through drops or on a sugar cube as is done or has been given in sugar capsules as in China. So what happens is when the oral polio vaccine is taken, it does allow for the spread through the intestine and the shedding into the environment. When you're putting vaccine virus into the environment, there is what we call sort of the protection is given to those children who have not been immunized, because if they come in contact with the vaccine virus, there's the potential that then protects them from also being infected. You don't have that same sort of protection being passed from somebody who's been vaccinated to non-vaccinated through the environment with the killed vaccine. That's much more of an individual protection because you don't have the shedding of the virus as much with the killed vaccine.
But the Sabin vaccine was discontinued in some cases because some people were still coming down with polio. Isn't that true?
There is this condition in the vaccine-associated paralytic polio, VAP, as we call it. And there is, when you get to a certain threshold of having no wild poliovirus circulating, that the risk, which is very, very low, of still having somebody with having the virus, the vaccine, become become infectious and cause actually paralysis does occur. So there's a risk-benefit ratio that has to be analyzed very carefully. And right now, with the polio endgame strategy, there is a strong movement in terms of one of the objectives of being able to introduce the inactivated polio vaccine virus vaccine into the program so that we can pull out the oral vaccine and put in the inactivated moving forward, because at that point we will not want to have vaccine virus circulating.
My guest is Dr. Rebecca Martin, Director of the Global Immunization Division in the Center for Global Health at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We're talking about polio on today's Please Explain. Can you explain the global effort to eradicate polio? When did it begin? And why, since it got very close, I gather, to totally eradicating polio just a couple of years ago, have we seen this resurgence?
So the initial efforts, Leonard, were, and you mentioned almost 30 years ago, 1988, there was a World Health Assembly resolution where member states of the World Health Organization endorsed the resolution towards polio eradication. There have been many times that over the years that we've come very close. We now have three regions of the World Health Organization four regions that have what we would call polio-free status. They do not have wild poliovirus circulating. And we still have virus that has never been interrupted in Nigeria, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. So these three countries have never interrupted transmission of wild poliovirus. But we have seen since 1988 over 90% reduction in cases and have prevented 13 million cases of paralytic polio and 650,000 deaths to date. So as we get more and more close to interruption, the most important component of this strategy, of course, is that we vaccinate children. And we know many countries have different coverage rates for the polio vaccine in their system. So if virus is introduced, we look at the risk for it being able to continue to spread in communities. And that is based on what is the coverage rate or what is the immunization coverage with polio vaccine. So 2012, we were very, very close. We had 223 cases reported, still only cases in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Nigeria. But in 2013, we then saw spread of virus from different countries, from Nigeria and Pakistan, to other countries. We saw Pakistan spread it to Syria, and then we saw also from West Africa, from Nigeria into the Horn of Africa. And there were 179 importation events that have occurred between 2004 and 2013. These importation events have led to over 3,500 cases of paralytic polio and a cost of a response globally at U.S. Dollars of $1.1 billion. Yeah.
No, finish what you were going to say.
No, I was going to say that. So we're seeing this in 2013. Now in 2014, we're heading into what we call the high season. Usually January through May is what we call the low season, where we see less transmission of wild poliovirus occurring. But in this time period, we have seen virus from Pakistan to Syria, Cameroon to Equatorial Guinea, and Syria to Iraq. And we still have a lot of transmission occurring in parts of Pakistan. Currently, to date, of the 74 cases in 2014, 59 of those are occurring in Pakistan, and 9 are related to importation events.
Wasn't one setback in Pakistan that the CIA had agents posing as healthcare workers while they were searching for Osama bin Laden? Supposedly it was about connected to a polio program. So has this become as much a political and cultural problem as it is a health problem?
The government of Pakistan has been in the lead in these efforts to really make sure that it can address the issues that are occurring there. In the northern part of Pakistan, northwest, there was a ban on immunization by the Taliban, and the vaccination has not been occurring. But working through the Global Polio Eradication Initiative with partners, we really follow the lead of the government of Pakistan and work closely with them in providing technical support and being able to achieve their goals.
Well, Punjab province in Pakistan is restricting anyone who can't prove they've been vaccinated from entering the province. So there are parts of Pakistan that are just going against the Taliban.
This is correct. I feel, and I was there last July. The real feeling there is that they very much want to get the job done. They're committed. The government is committed to doing this. And as we see with the vaccinators going out to vaccinate under some very dire situations and circumstances, the real feeling of the importance of protecting their children.
We will take some calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. My guest is Dr. Rebecca Martin of the Center for Global Health at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And we have another doctor on the line, Dr. Pam Clark. Hi.
Hi. I'm a clinical psychologist on Long Island in Nassau County. I'm a polio survivor. I had polio in 1954 in the epidemic in St. Louis, Missouri. I recovered relatively well. I was diagnosed with post-polio syndrome in the 80s, in the mid-80s. And there is a huge network of polio survivors who keep in touch internationally and nationally by email and provide information. And I am so glad you are talking about this, because both those of us who live through it, and we're a dying breed, and there's not a lot of attention paid to our physical needs and things like that. But we know how bad it can be and how much it can devastate families.
Dr. Martin, what is post-polio syndrome, and does it last for a lifetime?
This is what I was referring to in terms of that you can be infected with the wild polio virus, and then later on in life, after having paralysis or recovering, can develop symptoms later on in life in terms of weakness of muscles and fatigue and some severe situations as well. I want to thank Dr. Clark for her comments and memory, because this is what's so important that people forget, especially in the United States, not seeing polio virus here, that it is still in the world, and we do need to make sure that every child can be protected against paralysis.
Thank you for calling. Since we've eliminated smallpox, why hadn't polio been eliminated?
So after smallpox eradication, actually there was a large meeting held in the discussion of what other diseases could be eradicated. And this is where the idea of eradicating polio actually initiated from. And in 1988, as I said, through the World Health Assembly, the resolution came to do this as a global effort. Some of the reasons that have not been able to achieve it is truly being able to interrupt wild poliovirus transmission in certain countries. And why have certain countries not been able to do that? A lot of it is making sure that they vaccinate every child against polio. And if you leave any community unprotected, it is highly infectious. And we know, as I mentioned, with 200 people infected for every paralytic polio case, by the time you detect that, you have a large epidemic already occurring. So that's one reason. Other reasons we've seen is in terms of making sure that there is the political commitment in countries to take this on, to be able to move this endeavor forward, because it really does take the government ownership and commitment to move these areas and to be able to achieve polio-free status in countries. And then we've also now faced some areas with conflict, and trying to do that in certain areas has also been difficult to be able to access and to reach the children that need to be vaccinated.
Some other countries that have gotten involved are Cameroon. And hasn't Syria also imposed travel restrictions that require that anyone who's leaving the country must have been vaccinated against polio?
Well, this is part of the recommendations that have now come out of the International Health Regulations and the Emergency Committee that met on Monday, that anyone it's the onus is on the countries of Pakistan, Cameroon, and Syria, that they make sure that citizens, residents, as well as people who've stayed for four or more weeks in the country are vaccinated against polio before leaving. And this is a critical tool that we now have to be able to do this. And this was something that we were planning to implement as part of the initiative in the end of 2014, but we've brought it forward because of the occurrence of seeing this. The largest issue as well is today, the world is always ever changing, and we see countries that are in conflict or fragile states where if virus was introduced, such as a Central African Republic or a South Sudan, that we know immunization coverage of children is very low, and there could be very large outbreaks with many cases of paralysis. So how do we prevent that from happening? And this is one measure of using a very much coordinated global effort to make sure that we can stop transmission of virus.
Are all the strains the same?
So there are three serotypes of wild poliovirus, and also in the vaccine, we have types 1, 2, and 3 in the what's called the trivalent vaccine. To date, the last case of wild poliovirus type 2 was seen in 1999 in India, and the last case of type 3 that we've seen actually occurred in November 2012. So the one that's currently circulating is type 1. We have been able then to very much eradicate type 2. We're still monitoring for the progress and success for type 3 of really having interrupted it. But type 1 is the one that has still continued to circulate and that we're still trying to battle in achieving polio eradication.
Is the vaccination campaign expensive?
It varies, but it actually, in a response for an outbreak, is very expensive. Just with the outbreaks in 2013 in the Horn of Africa and Cameroon and in Syria, that response has been over $86 million. It's much more less expensive to actually prevent, and this is where the importance of preventing through immunization is much more cost-effective, as well as a longer term and without having the consequences of paralysis. The polio vaccine itself is very inexpensive and is given through immunization programs to children.
Let's take another call. Abdullah from Amityville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you. Isn't the real issue just simple hygiene and basic plumbing? I mean, I guess it's kind of an education issue. I mean, the vaccination is always so inevitable. You always hear the vaccination, and I'm not anti-vaccination or anything like that. But is there as much an effort on the education of people with their hygiene and or their plumbing practices or the return of these? Some people have lost these things.
Doctor?
Thank you very much for the question. It's actually a very important one, and the structural changes, the infrastructural changes in as we've talked about in sanitation systems and in hygiene are very important. And these measures are during outbreaks or even in prevention measures talked about how to wash hands. As you've heard much times probably about the importance of washing your hands and the importance of making sure that your water sources are safe. And these are ongoing, and you're absolutely right. These need more effort as well. Not only for polio, but for other waterborne diseases, as well as diseases that come through the environment. But with polio, we do try to do that. But in terms of making sure that you can be ultimately prevented is through immunization.
Now, if I were planning to go to Pakistan or Nigeria or Cameroon or Syria, would I get a booster shot?
It would be recommended that, yes, you do. The recommendations from the CDC for the U.S. citizens are that anyone traveling to countries that have wild virus circulating do get a booster dose, and it would be with the inactivated polio vaccine virus in the United States.
Even though I was vaccinated many years ago, it's no longer that immunity is no longer in my body?
The immunity is still there, but what it does also protect you is it gives you a boost in your mucosal immunity, which is important with the intestine. So it also prevents you from potentially being in spreading it as well. So the importance of just being sure that you're protected, protection is lifelong with the vaccine and has been used very well in the U.S., but the booster is a protective measure that's recommended.
When was the last case of polio in the United States?
The last case of wild poliovirus was actually in 1979, and it had come through Canada, initially imported from the Netherlands, and it occurred in the Midwest states in Amish communities who were not vaccinated.
My guest has been Dr. Rebecca Martin, who's director of the Global Immunization Division in the Center for Global Health at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We've been talking about the resurgence of polio on today's Please Explain. And do you think that we'll get to a situation soon where we'll be able to eradicate it again completely? We have about 10 seconds for you to give me an answer.
Ultimately, yes, but with a lot of work with the different countries and a global response and coordinated efforts, yes.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you very much, Leonard.